from the crypt.
Hello, boys and ghouls. Welcome to episode 135 of Dads from the Crypt. My name is Jason, and today I'm joined by Jody.
Hello.
Hello. And Mondo.
Hello.
Hello. How are we doing?
It's perky.
I am. It has been a long week and a half.
I think we're all like
exhausted.
I think we're overcompensating because it's a Monday.
Dude, it's just like, man, as we get older, it's like fucking. Everything takes longer to recover from. I'm always tired. Yes. I got 7 hours of sleep last night, which I never do. And I woke up so tired and exhausted this morning.
I can do you one better. This weekend, some guy was cutting trees in his yard and knocked down a power line, like a main line. Like one dude in his yard knocked out power to 4,400 people. Like that's
real fast. I hope this was Jody.
No, it was not me.
Some guy.
This is some guy, as you know, I reserve the right to call this man an idiot because he cut down a tree, knocked out power for 7 hours. Like it wasn't just like a little bit. And so we got home at like 5 o'clock. And by 9 o'clock, I'm like, I don't have anything to do. Like we're sitting around in the dark using flashlights. Screw it. I'm going to go to bed. I slept for 12 hours on Saturday night. And then last night I couldn't get more than like 6 because I slept so much the night before. So I just equaled all out to be exhausted again.
Yeah, they had to cut our power for like some planned upgrade, whatever, at like 10 p.m. And you know why I don't usually go to bed till like midnight. So we're sitting there like longest 2 hours of our lives with like no electricity, no internet. I guess we had like 5G, but we wanted to conserve our phones.
Right.
It was weird.
Yeah, that's exactly what we were doing.
I'll tell you one of my favorite things about having physical media is being able to utilize physical media when the internet goes down.
Right. Yeah, if I had power, that would have been great.
Exactly.
I would have had a great option.
If you have no power, like,
yeah.
I hope your Kindle has a charge on it.
just look at the Blu-rays, shine a light on them, spin them around like a disco ball. Look at this.
Just read the special pamphlet in those special editions that no one ever reads.
Come gather up, kids. I'm going to read you this special edition pamphlet.
Jody's busting out his VHS tapes, just pulling the film out and just magnifying the film on the wall.
Flashlight through it and pull the film.
Like getting like a toilet paper cone and putting the light to it.
Hey, you know, we're homeschoolers. We could call that science class. You know, we're good.
Exactly. Hey, man, that's inventive. I like that.
All right. Quick announcement. Didn't really tell anyone this, but we changed our release schedule to Mondays.
Press. We're telling them now.
Exactly. A week after the change.
If it's Sunday, you haven't heard this yet. But if it's Monday, now you know.
Exactly. So you're welcome. I don't know. We'll just start to change it up a little bit, see what happens to the algorithm.
It's one of those things where Monday's probably just a better day because everyone's going to work that, or most people are going to work that day. And, you know, it's a commuting day. And I'm kind of the same way. When I listen to podcasts, I have the podcasts I know that drop on Mondays. And that's kind of what I listen to for the next few days. So,
yeah, I mean, my thinking was that, like, I just picture dads and hammocks or mowing the lawn, wanting the podcast to listen to. That's when like, I try to do like a lot of the housework stuff.
If any of our loyal listeners get upset, we can always reconsider. So.
Yeah,
that's cool. And it also gives a little bit extra time to do the technical stuff in the background. Yeah. So it is helpful because, man, there are days where it's like, I just don't have time during the week. And then it's Saturday night. And I'm like, shit, I need to edit this fucker.
Yeah, Mondo, you need to really get it together. I always have the artwork at least like negative 5 hours after it's supposed to be there. There's sometimes it's already gone out before I have it. Or, you know,
if you ever wonder why your artwork changes on your podcast app, it's because it's this beautiful bald man here in the middle's fault.
Which one?
Oh, he's only one in the middle. Jason, you're on my right.
Yeah, I can switch. I can switch it up in the Riverside app to
compete. And Jason, I only call you pretty. I call Jody beautiful. It's fine.
Oh, nice. I got the upgrade.
Beautiful's still a little too. I'll take pretty.
Listen, guys, right, it's Monday night. We're starting a new series. Mm-hmm. It's just the three of us tonight. I always feel when we don't have a guest, you know, it's time to loosen up a little bit, be a little bit sloppier. And I'm drinking weed coffee right now. Like, I don't know what's going to happen tonight.
Yeah, I'm very fascinated by this whole weed coffee thing.
Oh, I'm using it too. It's pretty good.
Yeah, Jason, I think I might be out in LA next month. I don't know yet for sure, but if I am, I accidentally forgot to pause my subscription, so I have so many bags of, I'll bring you a bag.
Not that we would condone bringing any substances across state lines.
These are 50 state legal, motherfucker. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, in that case,
profit. Yeah. Yeah. How is it legal when it's THC in it though? In
it's okay. So here's my lesson for all of nine you living in illegal states. Okay, so Delta 9 THC. That's regular THC. It's what you get everywhere, mm-hmm. legal states or not.
Yeah,
has to be below 0.3%.
Right.
Okay. In a gummy or a cup of coffee, 0.3% is not very big. Like you can actually have a decent. I mean, like 15 milligrams. Is a big gummy, and it's like a teeny tiny percentage of a gummy. So that's how that works. Same with coffee. They also have a way of buying flour that's also legal. I can get into that later if somebody wants. Message us. This is where I've been exploring. I have been dedicating my life to this kind of research. It's very personal research to me.
Speaking of weed, I don't know if Jason's told the story on air, but I love when he was talking about how he and his wife will get stoned sometimes on a Friday and she'll order breakfast for the next day and forget about it until the breakfast shows up. I absolutely love that so much.
Yeah. I'm like, why is there a bag of food at the door? She's like, oh yeah,
man. Like I've had to cut back. I don't use that much, but I like feeling pretty good every now and again. But I get the munchies really bad, and with my condition, I'm like, I have to be careful what I eat. So I only do it now if I know I have. To be honest, my fascination right now is with pistachios.
Okay, I
like pistachios,
but they have to be in the shell. I don't understand. Like my wife likes them shellless. I don't understand it because
part of the whole process.
Yeah, like 80% of the fun of eating pistachios is cracking the little shells open. My only problem is I'll get high and then eat the entire fucking bag and then not feel good.
I do get that. However, I will say, and I actually had this conversation with my dad the other night, which is, you know, to reach a certain point where you can have these kind of conversations with your dad is always a cool thing. But we were talking about weed and I basically don't drink anymore. Like it just kind of happened. Like the more I smoked, the less I drank. And that's probably good for me in the long run, I think.
Yeah.
And so I
love the taste of beer and a taste of whiskey, and I wish I didn't.
I always have, but the last couple times I've had it, I've been like, it's fine. Like, it's almost killed my taste for it. It's weird.
You know what it is, though? I think you drink a lot of those higher ABV stouts.
I do. I like the strong
stuff. And the older I've gotten, I've lost my taste for those. Not completely, but to where it's a once-in-a-while treat where, Joe, do you ever come to Vegas? You're going to stay at my place, and we're going to crack open my fucking beer fridge where all I have are dark beers. We'll go to town because the reason why they're in there still, some are like 13, 14 years old, is because I just never got around to drinking them. And now I'm like,
Well, I remember the day that I tried an Arrogant Bastard after not having one for a long time. I used to really like it. Strong hops. And then there was one day I tried one after not having one for a couple of years. I'm like, this is too much for me. I've lost my ability to handle this hops.
I love Arrogant Bastard. I hate the fact that Stone Brewing is now owned by, a large beer corporation, because I'll define the video, but I've been to events where Greg, the old owner of Stone, would just get up on the bar with a megaphone, I'm not exaggerating, and shout like, fuck macro beer, fuck da da da, all the shit to the industry, and then he would stage dive. It was always funny because he'd be in a spiel saying, fuck macro beer, you with the broad shoulder, step over here. They make this fizzy yellow stuff. You, large guy, right here. Like, he would just be like, move people into place as he was speaking. So I think that one hurt a little bit more because he was basically saying how he would never sell out. And then again, I don't judge people for selling out unless they are the advocate and the voice of not selling out. And then it's kind of like, Lagunitas did the same thing. So a little beer education for anybody that likes beer. If you want to support the little guy, look for the independent craft brew label on them. Not all beers have
down bottle, right?
Yeah, yeah. Or very simply, like the hop rye I'm drinking right now from a local brewery isn't on that. It's not on there, but you can find that, or just go to your local brewery and or do a quick search and search the brewery name and search for who owns it. And yeah, you'll. It's very sad that you have this large corporation like InBev and Molson Coors and everything who are trying to buy up these small breweries, take all the shelf space from other small breweries and put them out of business. And it's all under their umbrella. And it's just, fuck, man, it's not good business. It'd be like Al and Gil trying to put us out of business for some reason. I mean, whatever business this is, I don't know.
Why is it worth your effort to get rid of us?
Yeah.
When Joe Rogan pulls up with a truck full of money.
I mean, all right. Hey, Spotify, if anybody from Spotify is listening, I'll fucking sell out for you back that Wells Fargo truck up and you tell me my thoughts. I will say whatever you want me to say.
We're nothing if not full of integrity.
No, man, it's as I get older, I just realize my time is more valuable than my money. And if I had more money, I'd have more time.
There you go.
It's a very, very simple equation.
All right. I got a little dad advice for you up on
top. I'm no mathematician, but.
Our dad advised us to sell out.
What is it? Oh, it's an adventure. It's Adventure Time when he always says mathematical.
Yeah.
Love that show.
All right. So as we alluded to, we're doing another switch up. We finished Black Mirror seasons 1 and 2. So as we promised, we're going to do some of the Creepshow TV show. We did a full review of the first Creepshow movie with our friend Eric from Bloody Good Horror. I highly recommend you check out that episode. Actually, it was our 100th episode, too.
Our 100th episode, yeah. And what's great about it is Eric loves that movie more than anyone I've ever met. And yeah, I love that. I thought I knew that movie really well until Eric was talking about it. And he just knew so much. It was fun. Yeah.
And again, you know, when we talk about how Tales from the Crypt is just always going to be part of the show's DNA, and Creepshow is really off-brand Tales from the Crypt, and not off-brand as in less quality, but just like they wish they were Tales from the Crypt, they just couldn't get the rights, so they did their own thing. And that's fine.
It's obviously very inspired by EC Comics and by Tales from the Crypt. Very inspired is even a loose word, like copied. But that's fine.
Much like Creepshow.
I like this
the
stuff.
Movie Creepshow was the same way. It was very
EC Comics inspired. The whole franchise.
Yeah, so it fits.
It definitely fits. So we're talking about the first season, the first episode, premiered on Shudder September of 2019.
Goddamn.
Feels like it was, you know, ages ago, but
I think yesterday was the 4-year anniversary of everything being shut down.
Oh, was it?
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's kind of crazy because it seems like I can't decide if it feels like it was a lifetime ago or if it feels like yesterday. I really can't. My brain goes back and forth on that, which is just kind of freaks me out. Because I'm like, I can't grasp this concept of time.
It's like there's a delineation in the before and after. And this is like one of those things that happen recent, like not too, pretty much right before, like a year or two before, but close enough where it's like, wow, this show feels like it came out like 10 years ago, but it's only less than 5.
Yeah, I'm gonna start calling the year 2020 as 2020 BC, and now we'll be in year 4, AD, because before COVID,
AC/DC?
No, before COVID, AD, I think, is it's a Latin term I'm not gonna butcher,
yeah. All right, so Jody, you can talk about the intro a little bit if you want, and then bring us into it. So for those who don't know, Creepshow does 2 segments per episode.
That's right, and Creepshow is on Shudder in case you want to watch these episodes. I would really recommend it. This is a show, before we get into the details of this episode, it's just like Black Mirror for me. I watched like the first season enthusiastically. I enjoyed it. Never went back. The same thing I did with Black Mirror. But what that means is it's all just new. There's so much TV. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I defend myself. There's just too much TV to watch. And sometimes I want to watch stupid TV I've seen a bunch of times. So I don't always watch new stuff.
I'm currently finding my favorite show to watch while stoned. 2 things. Yeah. One is on Dropout TV.
Dropout Game Changers. Perfect.
Dude, game changer show and make some noise has me in tears. And I've been rewatching It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah. No, Dropout, that whole channel, I think, exists for smoking and watching at the same time or having a gummy. It's the funniest stuff ever. And it's that much funnier when you're a little toasted.
And only $50 a year.
Yeah, totally worth it.
So, Sam Reich, if you want to sponsor
yeah,
guys that like your channel, I'm sure you're listening to this.
Yeah, this is off topic again, but if you're not sure what Dropout is, it's what College Humor became.
Yeah.
The old College Humor website became Dropout TV. Now they have a bunch of game shows and improv stuff, and it's really, really funny. Like,
I don't love everything on the channel, but there's a nice wide gamut for anybody to find someone they enjoy.
Game changer, though.
I see Jason thinking about it. Jason, I got you a login, brother. I got you.
Yeah.
Wait, right. Sam, if you're listening, I am not going to give Jason my login just for the record.
Of course not. All right, so let's talk about this show, Creepshow. All right. Throughout this whole series, we have the character of the creep, who is kind of the silent version of the Crypt Keeper from the Tales from the Crypt show. The Crypt just kind of like floats around and, you know, has small interactions with the story and then like picks up comic books mainly. Like, and so this one opens like there's a crate that's like the crate that Fluffy is in the first film. And it opens up and it's got issues of Creepshow in it. And the creep grabs one out, turns to the audience and laughs. Like that's the only sound he makes is like, and it's definitely a very Crypt Keeper inspired laugh. Like I heard shades of John Cassier in that laugh.
And at no point was he weirded out by opening this chest and he's on the cover of all these comic books.
Yeah, no kidding.
Fucking dude's a star. That way.
But one thing I like is they always kind of flip through the comics and you'll see like the ad pages, like, you know, buy all these monster masks or, you know, this mysterious bubblegum, like all the stuff that was in the old comics that I used to love.
It's kind of cool because some of the exposition they give that way too. So instead of having to just have a character do that weird thing where they have to explain the situation to somebody else, they just show the comic book panel and it works out really well, I think.
Yeah. And so it comes back and forth between it every now and then. So our first story in this first episode is Gray Matter. This is based on a Stephen King story. And okay, so in this one, during a hurricane, there's a group of townspeople gathered together in a store waiting out the storm as it's coming. One of them is like the local police chief. There's a local doctor, the lady who runs the store. And the talent in this show is nuts from the first episode. The lady who runs the store is Adrienne Barbeau. You've got Giancarlo Esposito as the doctor. And the sheriff or police chief is played by Tobin Bell. So crazy cast. And they're all fantastic in it, too. Like, they're really going for it.
And, of course, Adrienne Barbeau was in the original Creepshow movie.
Yeah.
It's like the most obnoxious character.
She was such a great staple though, and like The Fog and all those John Carpenter films. It's always seeing her pop up.
Favorite John Carpenter role she had. She was the only female presence in The Thing.
Yes, yes.
She was the voice of the Apple. I think it was the Apple computer.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Playing chess.
I forgot all about that.
So anyway, these three amazing actors are all hanging out in this store waiting for the storm to come. And while they're there, this local boy comes in. He's probably, I don't know, what, like 15, 14, somewhere in there, like young teenager.
Yeah, late middle school, early high school is kind of what they alluded to.
And he comes in and he's really nervous. He asks for a case of Harlow Supreme beer for his dad. And they all know that that's why he's there and that he's getting it for his dad. And he mentions that his father, the kid's name is Timmy. He mentions his father's real sick and that he doesn't want to go back home. And he starts kind of having a, like, don't make me go back. I don't want to go back. And everyone's like, no, you don't have to go back. It's fine. We'll go check on him. Chief of police and Doc are going to go volunteer to check on him. While they go to Timmy's house, the shopkeeper asks him, you know, what's going on with your dad? And so Timmy's telling this story while they're like looking around the house. And basically what happened is after his wife died, the man's drinking problem just kind of spiraled out of control. to the point that the only income that the family had was him winning drinking contests like that. He did nothing but drink after a certain point. And then later he started drinking and watching soap operas all day. And that's literally all he did. His son would run and get beer for him. He would sit around and drink.
Can you make a living off drinking contests? That seems kind of...
It doesn't...
Only in the Stephen King story.
Only in the Stephen King universe, yes. All right, so...
Real fast, if Stephen King wrote it, though, they'd be having a cocaine competition, not a...
He did write it. This was
Stephen King. That's right, it was based off his story, yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. He said after drinking a bad beer one day, and we don't know if it's really the beer or not, but he starts basically mutating into this like gelatinous gray monster. And he eats like local pets. Like you see, like as the two people are looking around the house, you see like a cat skeleton and a dog skeleton. But then they also find a couple of like females in the bathtub with like all their flesh melted. And so Doc and the chief of police decide it's time to get out. But
most disgusting thing they find in there, they find about him, is that he wants his beer warm, like hot.
Well, yeah, he starts in some. Yeah, it's just getting weird because he starts getting his kid to like heat it up on the stove.
Yeah,
like,
boiling the beer, then drinking,
boiling the beer, and also keeping the heat up in the house.
Yeah, that sounds
so that the bad. House is like intolerably hot all the time.
And one thing to keep in mind for people that haven't seen this, most of the story is the child telling the story to all these adults.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's telling the story to Adrian Barbeau while the others are walking around the house.
That intercut, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so as they find these two bodies, they decide it's time to leave. But before they can get away, the chief of police sees this giant gray slime monster guy and tries to take him out. It does not work. He's too gelatinous, like you can't punch him, you can't shoot him, he's just a blob.
In a cool effect, he takes a gun and shoves it into the stomach cavity of this thing and starts firing, and you see it in the gray matter doesn't even give a shit.
Yeah, it just kind of vibrates.
It eats
it falls down on top of the chief of police and just absorbs him into the gray. Doc makes it back to the store to report on what's happened. We find out that Timmy has actually come there specifically for the purpose of luring some people back because his dad's hungry. He needs to eat. But when he absorbs the doc or the chief of police, he splits into two gray blob monster people. And they start realizing that within a couple days, like 6 days, the creature would take over the entire world and get rid of all humanity. And, The creatures reach down and grab Doc through the ceiling right at the end as everyone screams. So this is the beginning of an apocalyptic story.
And he has the kid has this great line that like he just wanted one more. He just kept saying that about his dad. You know, he kept saying one more drink. I'll stop quit. I'll quit tomorrow. And then
I'll quit tomorrow.
Yeah. And they ask him. Mm-hmm. Well, they ask him at the end, like, why would you do this? He goes, it's my dad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just want one more.
Yeah.
I wish they would cut on that line because that's just like, that was the killer line, too.
Yeah.
It's really well done in that you don't really kind of see that coming. You think he's there trying to almost like confess his sins or almost like for a confession to get it off his chest.
Yeah. Well, he's afraid of it. That's what it felt like.
And then we find out that he's just, it's pretty heartbreaking.
I'm not going to lie.
He's just the ultimate enabler.
Mm hmm.
It's still somehow more upbeat than anything I watched in Black Mirror, though. So I'll take it.
This is light and fluffy. Yeah.
I would rather fight this blob monster than fuck a pig. Just me.
No, no. That's our next. Would you rather? Oh god.
The effects in here, the production design are great. The monster looks really, really cool.
It's real cool. It looked like the first shot of him was practical effects, but when he split apart, I think it was CGI, right?
A little bit.
Yeah. Everyone directed by Greg Nicotero, one of the the greatest special effects artists of all time. So,
I mean, I was looking at his IMDb. His first like three movies, pretty more or less, are Day of the Dead, Evil Dead, and Creepshow 2. That's how he started his career.
Yeah.
And Greg Nicotero, like, every great effect you see in those movies, he probably had his hand in it. Like in Day of the Dead, where they do the like rip the guy apart. That was Greg Nicotero's work.
Also, first season of Walking Dead, he did all the effects for that. Yeah. And that's why it dropped off a cliff after that season.
Well, he...
Sorry, so Walking Dead fans.
No. We're going to be talking about Greg Nicotero and The Walking Dead a lot as we go through these. So Greg Nicotero directed 50 episodes of Walking Dead, and he directed 13 episodes of Creepshow, 13 out of 26.
I didn't realize he did that many, did he? Because I thought they canned him after the first season. Maybe after the second season.
Was it Chuck Russell?
But I know they slashed the budget for that immensely after that first season, which is why I started. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I tapped out on that show after the whole barn thing and the I'm like, nah, this is stupid. But
he has a very promising directing career. I really want him to do like a more like a full feature length. I know he probably is too busy to commit to that, but he did a ton of Walking Dead. He did 50% of the episodes we're gonna watch for Creepshow. Talented guy all around. Nothing more you can really say about that.
So a couple cool things about this segment that I really, really enjoyed. First of all, did either of your parents ever send you to the convenience store with a note to buy them cigarettes or beer?
No.
Mine definitely
that's honestly 90% of it.
It was one of those things as a kid, as they're having me at 7 years old run across traffic to get to the convenience store. Did I ever tell you how I used to, at 7 years old, how I used to accidentally, unknowing to me, sell weed to a guy?
I did not know.
He worked across the street at the convenience store. I'll call the convenience store name out, Auntie M's Market on Arville and Flamingo down here in Las Vegas. And this is 33 years ago, so I doubt the guy still works there. If he does, he made some bad choices. But I used to go there, and this guy was actually also a morning radio DJ. So I won't say what station he worked for, his name. Oh, wow. But I would bring him, and granted, I was just selling, is this weed, but still, my parents would give me a bag and have me go to the store to buy like a loaf of bread or whatever. So I'd give him the bag and the loaf of bread, and I'd give him $20, and he'd hand me back way more money than I gave him. And it wasn't until I was older that I realized what was happening, but that he would definitely let me buy cigarettes. I definitely bought cigarettes and beer for my parents at that convenience store.
Sure.
Which, dad advice, don't fucking do that to your kids.
No, please.
At the time you think, oh, this is kind of cool. I'm 7 and I have this can. When you're older, you're like, oh shit, that was fucked up. One of the visual things I really loved about this is towards the end when they're kind of freaking out in the store, how you couldn't see the characters, but you saw their silhouettes of shadows on the wall. It was so reminiscent of like my first thought was like in one of the Tales from the Crypt episodes where they're in the EC Comics office. And it's kind of what you see is like those silhouettes going in and out of those frosted glasses. And I really, really enjoyed that visual.
Yeah, no, this episode looks really good. And, you know, all these actors are just, you know, iconic at this point. I mean, Tobin Bell, you know, as we saw in Saw 10, you know, he's just got amazing chops. He's just like,
it's kind of
watchable.
Yeah, Tobin Bell's so interesting because I wish he got more dramatic roles or more. Because in Saw 10, I thought the best parts of that movie was the drama. And when he was just him dealing with his condition, I thought that I didn't realize how good of an actor he was until I watched Saw 10.
Yeah, every time, you know, I'm just watching random TV, I'll just see him pop up like in the West Wing or some like cop show. He just kind of pops up somewhere.
I think prior to Saw, he was just one of these guys who was everywhere. And then, you know, now we all know who he is.
Right. He was just like kind of a character actor. And then, you know, Giancarlo, Breaking Bad, Do the Right Thing, A Homicide, Life on the Streets. Again, just great
resume. Mandalorian?
The Mandalorian. That's right. And he's actually going to be at Monsterpalooza this year.
Okay. He was also the villain in Far Cry 6.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And as far as story goes, if anybody's a Far Cry fan, Far Cry 6 knocks it out of the fucking park. Just saying.
He's one of these guys that everything he's in, it's better because he's in it.
Yeah.
If you guys know the story of Breaking Bad, he was supposed to be killed off within a season. And then he did such a good job. The writer basically said, I forgot the writer's name. It'll come to me later. But he basically said, no, this guy needs to be the main villain because he was so good in his role. And that's always fun to see when it's one of those things where it's like he was promoted based on his merit at work.
Right.
Vince Gilligan is the Breaking Bad.
And then, you know, we already talked about Agent Barbeau, just classic horror queen. One of those, you know, one of those 80s moms characters, that, you know, we all just kind of find comfort in. And then the boy is played by Christopher Nathan. He hasn't done too much, but I thought he was really good. I liked him a lot. He was in one of the Walking Dead spinoffs.
Well, so he did a good job of coming across like he really was freaked out and scared and worried about his dad. And then you find out he's actually, you know, kind of in it with his dad. I feel like this is a really good first episode of this. Like, and we'll talk about the second story in just a minute. Both are fantastic, I think. Yeah. But it's just the atmosphere of this. It gives you kind of an idea of what you're in for story-wise. That, you know, these stories may, you know, it was a fairly dark story of this guy, you know, spiraling to alcoholism. But it's so well done that it's actually really enjoyable to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did also like a lot of the Easter eggs they put in. If you're a big King fan, I can't list them all, but you know, they mentioned the Grady twins from reference to The Shining, and there's just lots of visual stuff happening. So it's one of those. I've seen this a couple times, and like every time I find some new stuff, kind of looking around. All right, Jody, let's move to the next one.
All right, so we get the creep again briefly between things, and he opens a can of beer. You know, like I said, he kind of interacts with the stories briefly. Like he chuckles and kind of comes into view and he opens a can of beer. And then you flip around in the book and it shows like a make a monster hobby kit. And it's just cool little visual flair that it's not necessary, but it's fun. It makes nice transitions.
It's fun, but it's kind of like, again, you're going to have to compare him to the Crypt Keeper, where that was such a personality.
Right.
So big, and they went so far into the gags. Even like the first season, he still had a lot of personality, even though they were still developing it. And it's like they're kind of put in the box where either they don't give him a personality and that way no one gets mad at it, but it's not as memorable, or if they give him a personality, they run the risk of just not living up to the Crypt Keeper.
I honestly feel like they do a decent job of not making him too big of a focus in Creepshow. And it's the same way in the movies too. Yeah. He's there and he kind of binds it all together, but he's not the focus by any means. Not like the Crypt Keeper is.
I honestly wonder if they could just get John Cassier to do the voice. and I don't think his voice is copyrighted. But I think to your point, the more you talk about it, like, yeah, I kind of like the fact he's more of a subdued character.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the only way to go. Because, yeah, if you try and give him a real voice, then
it would just compare him
to the Crypt Keeper. It wouldn't be the same.
Everyone would just compare him to the Crypt Keeper, and it wouldn't work.
Right.
But I almost like the idea of John Cassier, but because he's obviously such a versatile actor, I feel like he could do something different.
Sure.
More appropriate for this character.
He was in Vegas this weekend at Days of the Dead Con, and I just did not get a chance to go out there. I was just so busy this weekend.
Yeah.
So bummed because I wanted to get my my thought was I should get my Crypt Keeper tattoo signed by him and have my tattoo artist tattooed on. But I was like, it's gonna take so much real estate. But I wanted to have him sign that Tales from the Crypt thing you gave me. I thought that'd be really cool.
Yeah,
what it is. I'll catch him another time.
When are you gonna finish the tattoo?
Saturday, actually.
Ooh, okay. We'll post pictures.
Yeah, this one took the first session was about almost 5 hours. Oof. Yeah, just all black and gray, realistic. My tattoo artist, Jason, as well, and Jason Paxman, if you guys are looking at good work done here in Las Vegas, he's done all my cool tattoos, my Beyond tattoo, my Pinhead, my Burning Church, my Black Phillip, everything. He's
a very detailed artist.
What's funny is like the Pinhead tattoo I got was his second ever portrait.
Oh, wow.
Really?
And wow. I think I paid like, I don't want to say how much I paid. Sorry. Because I don't want to, but he gave me a huge discount on it because he goes, I don't know how long it's going to take. I don't know how to do real. I'm really not a portrait artist. I'm trying to learn it. So I was like, yeah, whatever. What's the worst that can happen? And it turned out amazing. And I was so happy with it. And afterwards, he told me he was nervous as hell because it was the hardest tattoo he ever did. But ever since then, you know, my wife, my daughter, all my sister-in-laws, and two of my brother-in-laws have all gotten tattooed by him, and my mother-in-law. Nice. So he's, I've given him a lot of business, which is cool. Like that's how it should be. Like good work should we get this. But he did a really, really cool arm piece for someone, starting an arm sleeve with the creeper on there from Creepshow. I'll send it to you guys. We should let's link him in the episode description if anybody wants to see his work. But it's fucking badass.
So what we're saying is we gotta fly Jody out so you can do a Crypt Keeper tattoo for Jody.
I'm the only one that doesn't have one now.
Hey, come get one.
All right. Good,
good. That could be your first tattoo, and it would make sense.
It would.
But I do think you should do it on your skull.
Just have the Crypt Keeper's face on the back of my head so I can turn around and be like,
okay, you're joking, but that's fucking badass, and yes, you should do that.
I enjoy being married.
Hold on. Never mind.
No, okay.
I have a joke I will tell you off the air. Just remind me of this.
All right. Let's get into this next story here. Our next story is The House of the Head. And this is written by another great horror author. This is Josh Malerman's story. He's the one who wrote Bird Box, you know, the Sandra Bullock thing with the, he's written a bunch of other good books. Like the book Bird Box, much better than the movie, I think.
Agreed.
The sequel, Mallory, actually really good. And he's written a lot of other good stuff, too.
Oh, wait. I didn't know he wrote a sequel to Bird Box.
Yeah. And I really like it. He wrote Unburied Carol, Goblin, Mad Black Wheel. He's just one of these, like, new wave of horror authors out there. And I really like his stuff. So
is this segment based on a story? Or did he write it specifically?
Oh, he wrote it for this. This is a story he wrote for Creepshow. All right. And in this story, there's a little girl named Evie. I'm going to guess... 9, maybe 8, I don't know, little girl. And she's an imaginative little girl, and she's got this huge, like, incredible dollhouse. Like, as somebody who has little girls in my house, they would die to have that dollhouse. It's this gigantic one. And she has this little family in there, a mother, a father, a son, and a dog, and she calls them the Smiths. One day when she gets home from school, she discovers that everyone in the house has been moved to different positions than where she left them. And she also discovers that the dollhouse now has a tiny little figurine of a severed head that's, I think, sitting on a table the first time she notices it. And she touches the bottom of it, and it's got, like, wet stuff where the stump is, so, like, blood or something. But it's just this little zombie-looking head. And it's there, and she didn't put it in there, and all of her figures were moved. And so she starts to realize this keeps happening. Every time she comes back to her dollhouse, her figures have moved again. And they start having, like, these weird poses, like they're scared of something. They're obviously, like, in distress. The dog is locked outside, and always that head is there. And so she starts getting worried about her little doll family, and goes to the big fancy doll store and buys a little policeman doll and puts him in the house. And later she wants to find a spiritual doll. And so she goes looking for, like, a priest or a rabbi and can't find one. So she gets a random Native American because they're spiritual people, according to the guy who works there.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's trying to make a sale. But anyway, so she puts both of these figures in at different points. And at one point, the little police officer figure, she sees him, like, trying to go up the stairs with his gun drawn. We never see them move, by the way. We just see them, like, in different positions. And it's, like, on the stairs with his gun drawn. And her dad sees it. And she says, oh, they're hunting for rats or whatever. And as soon as dad walks away, she looks back. Policeman's body is laying at the bottom of the stairs. He has no head. Same thing happens to the Native American. He ends up, like, hanging out a window, no head. And
that part was really creepy because she goes, are you looking for him outside? I don't think he's outside. And then she walks to the other side of the dollhouse and sees a severed hand and severed head. I was like, oh.
Yeah. And there's blood on it again. Like, there's always real fresh
doll blood.
Blood or paint or whatever it is. And then pretty quickly, the Smiths themselves start to fall, and the mother and father are downstairs. And then you go upstairs in the little house, and they find the son, and he has the little shrunken head on his head. It's actually a pretty freaky visual, honestly, a little doll. And so she freaks out and grabs the head and throws it across the room, lays down in her bed, and then realizes, maybe I don't want that thing in my room. I want it contained back in the house. And so she goes digging around under her bed trying to find it. And when she finds it, it is grown to a full size, human head.
That thing's so freaky.
It's a great effect too.
It's a really good effect because it looks like a mask, but not like a mask. It's enough to where it stands out from the rest of the scenery.
Yeah. And so she grabs it, shoves it back into the house. And then our final scenes, she is in the car, and their parents are asking, like, are you sure about this? And yeah, I'm sure. Well, maybe she's just growing up. And we find out that she is now selling this like big fancy custom dollhouse. And as they drive off, the woman who bought it is looking around at it, and she sees the little boy figure with his back to her with the little head on his, and it turns around. And then we end with our Crypt Keeper painting the head, or our creep. I'm going to call him Crypt Keeper.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing.
He's painting the little head, and then he holds up the next issue of Creep Show, preparing us for the next one. So, really great little episode.
This freaks me out every time. Like,
I love this
one. Cinematography is so damn good. Like, the way that they're like kind of playing the camera like through the dollhouse, and they're kind of framing her in it, and it's got these like really cool shots, and she's looking around, and we're like in her point of view looking at different parts of the house, and every time she like goes through like the sequence, like something changes.
Yeah,
it's kind of like in like Paranormal Activity, where like you're looking at different cameras and stuff, and then like something changes that shouldn't have changed. That's the kind of thing that my brain just freaks out about.
Well, it's amazing that they managed to make so much tension, because I feel like it's a really tense episode.
Yes.
And it's mostly just this little girl and stuff moving around in her dollhouse that we never see move. So it's a lot of it is on her shoulders. Like,
yes,
it's her reactions and her everything, because nothing else moves. There's almost no other characters, and it's great. Like, there's so much tension. That camera work plays a lot.
She does a really good job with the kind of this stoicism at first,
right?
Where she's not super, she's like, huh, this is weird. And I think one thing that adds to the tension is as her concern grows, as she starts getting scared, it makes you, the viewer, feel the same way. Cause now you're invested. You're in with this girl. And I will also say, this episode is a perfect example of why you should let your children watch horror movies. Because as a 5-year-old that was allowed to watch horror movies, the minute that shit happened in my Castle Grayskull, it'd have been in the trash can outside on fire.
No, I agree. She is fantastic in this. She's played by Carly Fleming. She's actually Judith in The Walking Dead.
Okay.
Rick Grimes' daughter. When she like they do like a flat, I think they do like a forward, flash forward.
When did he have a daughter? I thought he only had the son Carl.
But no, she's like pretty much the same age as my daughter is. So like as a father with a kid that age, I go into that panic father mode.
Yeah.
Like the first episode, there's a lot of freaky stuff. There's some tension, but I don't find it scary.
Right.
Just cause we're just kind of jaded horror fans. This one gets the father in me like totally like anxious.
Well, and it's one of those things. It's so well done because like nothing actually happens to any people, but it always feels like it could. Like any second now, shit's gonna pop off and it's gonna get real bad for everybody. And it never actually gets to that point.
That's a good way to put it.
It's right there. Like this episode's edging us the whole time. You know, like we are almost there, but never quite. It's enough to keep you in it the whole time.
You hear that, John Harrison? You edged us.
This is directed
by friend of the pod, John Harrison.
Director.
Real fast. Yep. I have some other thoughts. It's okay though.
Go ahead.
Okay, Mondo. Well, the one thing that about the dad character is they never did the thing that they do a lot in horror movies where the child is telling the dad, like, or the parents, oh, this is going on. They don't believe her. She just never tells them.
Yeah. Right.
And because as a father, I'm like, please, like, I want you to tell me this. Cause I would like, as a horror movie fan, I'd be like, get this fucking thing outside. It's going to be in on fire. And I
think part of what makes this work so well, though, is because she reacts to it like an actual kid would. Like when she first sees things moving around, she's not scared. She's just kind of like, huh, how'd you get here? Why are you in the wrong place? Whereas an adult, immediately when things start moving around that you didn't move, it's upsetting and scary.
Yeah.
But she was not, she didn't get scared.
No, she had that.
Started getting bloody and her doll started getting decapitated. That's a good reason to freak out.
I think when you're that young, you still have that imagination and you have a lack of boundaries. And I don't mean boundaries as far as like emotional boundaries, but you have a lack of like, you don't understand reality 100%, which is okay. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a great part about being a kid and being able to dream and imagine things. So I have two questions for you, gentlemen. First one is, do you think the Native American doll was a homage to Creepshow 2?
I thought so. Because he's standing on like a little stump thingy, the little figure. And that's what made me think of it too.
Okay.
I was going to the same thing. And the second one, does the shopkeeper who makes these dollhouses know what's happening?
Right.
Because he's kind of weird at the beginning. But there's a scene at the beginning where she goes, oh, my daughter loves a dollhouse. And he goes, she should. It's very special.
Yeah.
And that's what I kind of couldn't put my finger on. If he knew, it's okay that we didn't get a resolution there, but I do love that little seed being planted.
Yeah. I wonder if there's like something on the cutting floor about that. I could see it.
I didn't need any more of that.
I didn't really need it to be anything.
But yeah, I do get what you're saying, though, because he's just off enough that you could go, okay, does he know something, or is it just that he's a weirdo who sells dolls? Like, I mean, nothing wrong with that, but like the people who collect dolls can sometimes be kind of odd.
He reminds me of, there's a King of the Hill episode, the Texas Skill Saw Massacre, where Hank cuts Dale's finger off with a skill saw. Dale deserved it. He wasn't paying attention like usual. But Hank has to go to anger management and he meets this guy there who's very high strung. And the guy goes, there's two things I love. Painting doll furniture, because that's what he does for a living, and kicking ass. He dies of a heart attack.
Spoiler.
Hey, fucking show is 20 years old and the best show of all time. If you haven't watched it, I don't know what, dude. Horse water, do what you want. Pee in it or drink it. I don't give a shit.
I always find them to be a little bit odd because it's just kind of the odd character out a little bit and it is just kind of like there. But I don't find anything more. Again, if you were going to expand this episode, that's probably where you would do it. But that's kind of.
I don't think it was needed. I like the fact that it was a question I still had at the end. I didn't feel like it wasn't it was unresolved or anything. I just felt like, huh, that's an interesting thread that could potentially lead to this. And they are intentionally vague in this episode. Like, you never find out what's happening to the house, and it's okay because the important thing isn't what's happening; it's reactions of the little girl around what's happening.
Right, we're on her like roller coaster. We don't need anymore.
And I very much appreciate the chaoticness of it. Not like it's chaotic in filming, but that there's no reason for this as far as we can tell. Like, this isn't because of some like thing that someone did. It just happens. And that's scarier to me. Like,
now, I'm just wondering,
you choose these people because he did, you know, that's scary because you were home. That's the scariest line ever.
Jody, I don't know what just happened, but you got really loud.
No,
it was okay on my end.
Okay.
I'm just wondering if like Greg Nicotero has that head and he just like puts it around his office or his home to freak people out. Of course.
Do you think he gives it to people?
I want the full size one. And I don't know what you're saying. I figured out where we were at.
I just rolled right past it. Again, this episode was directed by John Harrison. He did the music, or at least worked on the music for the first, I think, first two creep shows. Definitely the first one. I think he was involved in the second one.
The first one, he did that, and then he did Donna. He did Day of Dawn the Dead. Day of the Dead. And two of the best horror movie soundtracks ever, in my opinion. Waxwork Records made great releases of these just recently. Actually, the three LP Dawn of the Dead release is awesome too. So just Waxwork, shout out, sponsor us. I am a subscriber. And then he kind of didn't do a whole lot of horror movie music after that. But god damn, did he leave two just amazing soundtracks?
Yeah, he meant more of the directing. He did the Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. He did two Tales from the Crypt episodes. He did the Dune miniseries, mm-hmm. the Book of Blood. And then he actually did, I think I saw 8 episodes of Creepshow. So basically between Greg Nicotero and John Harrison, they did 21 of 26 episodes, I think, if I'm doing my math right.
I'm actually upset on Jason's interview with him. Jason never asked him why he stopped making horror movie soundtracks.
I mean, he still plays music. And actually, last time I talked to him, he was working on a music-related project. I don't know what else I can say or what's going on with that.
That's good.
He's always doing music stuff.
I just wonder if maybe he did those 2 soundtracks and like, those are fucking good. That's it. Which
I think his bands are like...
I think he
just had bigger ambitions. So I think he wanted to be involved with the music, but he wanted to like be the director as well.
That's a good way to put it.
Kind of give that up.
Yeah, so I saw when I was looking over his wiki that like he's an executive producer on these new Dune movies. Like he's still very much in it right now.
Oh wow, I didn't know that. That's cool. That's super cool.
And I know we talked about this episode, so we'll probably take an excerpt from my interviews with him when we talked about directing this, and I'll probably release it as a separate bit. Okay, anything else we want to say about this one? Again, these are 2 fantastic episodes. Maybe, I don't know if we want to do a rating on these or just say which one we prefer. What do we want to do?
I think we should rate them just like we did Black Mirror.
Okay.
Because I do think even though they're individual segments, you have to rate the episode as a whole.
Sure.
As a whole or separate?
As a whole.
Okay, so you want to do it as a whole, not separate segments.
Yeah, I prefer to put things in holes instead of doing them separately.
But I mean, the choice of which 2 to put together does make a difference as to, mm-hmm. Which ones are, how the whole experience works. So yeah, I think it's fair.
Well, like any great anthology movie, even, I think positioning of the shorts is actually very important.
How about this? We'll rate the episodes as a whole, but then I think if we want, we can give which one is our preference.
Sure.
It would be pretty obvious.
That's fine.
All right, Jody.
On the air production notes right here, guys. This is inside baseball, peeling back the no kayfabe here.
All right, so I got to go with a 5 on this first episode. I feel like it comes out of the gate swinging, and it's a great introduction to the series. They're not all as good as this one, but I feel like it sets the expectation for where we're going to be going.
Okay. And which is your preference?
Of the 2, I like the House of the Head. It's so good.
All right, Mondo.
Man, I wonder if people think that we're just too positive sometimes. Probably. Except for... Did Jason shit on Scare Package too, or was he more?
No, I liked it.
He liked it more.
I liked it more. I definitely preferred it. I liked I thought the Saw commentary was a lot fresher.
I love the Hellraiser scene.
The Hellraiser. There's a lot more cool. I liked about.
I'm just wondering. I edited it, but I didn't get a chance to really listen to everybody's thoughts on it. But I worry sometimes that people think we're too positive on some of this stuff, but I'm going to go with a 5 because we're
fans. That's what we do.
In 48 minutes, at no point did I feel like it was moving too slow.
Yeah.
As a pro wrestling fan, I've always said one of the great things about a great pro wrestling match is you can be watching it and you don't think about how long it's been. And then you look at the time and it's been way longer than you think because that's how much you're invested in it. I'm talking to you, Kenny Omega and Okada, in your 75-minute match that I didn't realize was 75 minutes because it was that. Imagine watching a wrestling match for the amount of time that takes to make a full-length movie. But that's what I mean, though. When you can take a 40-minute episode and never, ever feel like it's dragging, never feel like this is a filler piece to fill that time, that's really impressive, actually, because even some movies I love, I can tell where they put a little bit of filler in here and there. So, I'm going with a 5 on this one as well.
Hey, which is your favorite?
This is the House with the Head. And not that the first one was bad at all, but I still remember once that immediate first shot came over the dial house, my brain immediately went back to that. And I was like, oh, this is so good. And I was super excited to watch it.
Yeah. again, people might criticize us for hive mind, but we're all, I think at this point, if you are with a certain group of people for long enough, I think you kind of align in your thinking in some ways. And we've been doing this for long enough. I think we're entitled to that. But yeah, I'm giving it a five. Everything's fantastic. The cast is great. The acting's great. Production is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to give it to the House of the Head. I still think that's one of the most tense segments I've ever seen. That freaks me out every time.
It's just so intriguing all the way through. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. while I was watching it to record tonight, my daughter walked in and she was like, "So what are you watching?" And I kind of explained what was happening in it. And she stood up behind me and watched for a little bit, then pulled up a chair and was like, "So is this something I can watch?" I'm like, "Yeah, you can go watch it. Like, you can go back to the beginning and watch this," because it sucks you in. Like, it's so intriguing.
Real fast, which age is this child? Because you have so many. Yeah,
which one?
My 12-year-old.
Okay. It's very important. I thought they did so much in that the scenes are not gory, but they're the gore is disturbing, even though you know it's just these. Like, my brain goes so many places in an episode. Like, is our consciousness tied into these dolls? Like, are we those dolls in the world right now? And I think it's fantastic.
Yeah,
same.
I'm gushing over it right now.
Made me think of Hereditary too, where they had like the micro dioramas and stuff.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite things, camera work wise, on Hereditary. Is I could never tell if I was looking at a miniature or a real life thing, depending on how the camera was positioned. It was really.
Did I ever tell you how I watched Hereditary 3 times in a 24-hour period by accident?
Why?
I don't think so.
That explains a lot, Mondo.
It was getting. Hold on, Jake. Pause. What does that explain?
I was just being funny.
Oh, like, I love Toni Collette. Like, I think she's a fantastic actress, but I don't want her to cut my head off with piano wire.
Like, you don't want her in the corner of your room at any point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I bought the movie on iTunes a day at release. I love supporting cinema when I can, and obviously things I love. And I heard so much good press about it. I can't wait to watch this. And I started watching it, and then my wife and daughter were into it, and they're like, "We're so tired," and they both went to bed. And I'm like, "I'm fucking tired, but I'm watching this movie." And then I fell asleep, like, right after the little girl loses her head.
Mm-hmm.
And then I woke up at the very end. I woke up when Toni Collette is... Spoilers, guys. If you haven't seen Hereditary, fast forward 30 seconds, because I do not want to spoil this for anyone that has not seen this fucking amazing movie. But I woke up at the scene where Toni Collette is cutting her own head off, and the sun is becoming Paimon, and I was like, "What the fuck happened the last hour that I was?" So I watched it again, and I couldn't go to sleep because I thought it was such an awesome movie and disturbing and terrifying. And the next day, I was telling my daughter and my wife about it, and they're both like, "Let's watch it again." I'm like, "Fuck yeah, put that thing on." And what a great movie, though. Did you see the A24 did the Gingerbread House?
Yeah, no. I did.
I thought about buying it. It was like $70. And I'm like, I'm not going to eat it. This is going to rot in my room.
All right. We're running a little low on time, so Mondo, give us your song of the day.
Time is arbitrary. Do we have a time limit, Jason?
I want to keep it to a certain time.
Okay.
More on those.
So I apologize if this band I'm about to mention and the song I'm about to mention turns out to be sketchy at some point. But I picked up a record recently, so it has nothing to do with the episode. I was trying to think of something to do with the episode, but as we all know, I forgot to watch it until I texted and messaged you guys and be like, "Oh, hey, I just realized I didn't actually watch this." So I had to watch it. And the band I picked is a band I discovered because they're getting some buzz from a couple people I'm friends with on Twitter who love the same genre I do, but they're also not racist, which is amazing. And they're mentioning this band called Sever from the United States. There are like 3 or 4 Severs out there, but this is the United States one that just came out with a record last April called At Midnight by Torchlight. So I bought the vinyl as I was buying some of this stuff for my birthday, and fucking this record just blew me out of the water. It's just, for somehow for a genre that's become very stagnant, they find a way to weave these great musical segments with obviously using synthesizers, et cetera, et cetera. But the song I'm going to pick off there is probably just, I'll just do the first track. No, I won't. I'm going to do the fourth track because I like the name of it better. Hammer of Vengeance. And one of my favorite releases I've heard. Well, shit, it came out last year, so I can't call it a top 10 of this year, but it would have definitely been my top 10 if I would have heard it last year. And it's just a fantastic band, and I hope they get more play. I don't quite, and the reason why I worry about their sketchiness is because the booklet has a scene of, it looks like a white person being hung, but I'm like, that is not okay. Like, I'm weirded out by that. Mm-hmm. But the front of the cover, the album cover is a boar. And the last song is called Eastern Boar. I think the guy just likes pigs. it's a one-man project, and that even there are so many one-man projects nowadays that are fucking terrible, and they somehow get these underground followings for whatever reason. This is one that's actually worth listening to, and if I ever update the playlist, I'll put it on there. I don't think it's on Spotify or iTunes, though. I don't think it's made it that far yet. The label that releases it, Iron Bonehead, seems to not put a lot of their stuff on streaming because they want you to pay the $5 to buy the digital album, which, dude, like, you can listen to samples. If it's something you like, give them a few bucks and support the artist.
Sever, S-E-V-E-R?
S-E-V-E-R. Sever, Hammer of Vengeance, off their first full length, At Midnight, by Torchlight.
It is on.
What the fuck was that noise?
That was the opening of the song.
Oh. It sounded like error being.
I'm trying to just see. The song is on there. I don't know if it's like a bootleg or something that someone put on.
Well, so there are other bands named Sever.
But that this is Hammer of Justice. Or Vengeance, I'm sorry.
Hammer of Vengeance.
Yeah, okay, yeah, they're on Spotify.
Cool. And you can find them on YouTube. So if you want to check them out, please do, and fucking support local music, man.
See, we're just doing everything live tonight.
That's what, support independent media. If you love independent media, support it. While I'm talking about independent media, shout out to our friends at Grimcore Studios for their fantastic comic book, which is called...
You can't see right now, but I'm backing up my office chair so I can show you the comic book.
Great audio, but great video. The Return of Kamataz, which the Azrael, I believe, was on our podcast. And fantastic comic book. It was a Kickstarter where I actually got my stuff, so that's always really cool. Yeah. And really, really, really awesome layouts and a great comic book. I think they're like one of the top five right now on Amazon.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So, cool. Speaking of supporting independent media, if you can, check out Grimcore Studios with two M's on all your social media platforms and support those guys because they're doing really, really cool stuff. It's very, very EC Comics inspired with a Mayan Aztec flair to it and just
nice.
Right up, like, warms my cockles.
Hmm. We love it when your cockles are warmed.
Warms my cockles and hardens my cock.
I don't like that. No.
It doesn't really. At no point reading this comic book.
Don't like that. Okay. All right, Jody, give us some horror news.
All right.
Get that out of my head.
I mean, right. You can put whatever you want in your head, Jason. It's not my head.
And I got a few, it's kind of random smattering of things. First off, I was not aware that there was a book version of the In Search of Darkness series.
I didn't either.
Yeah, it's a big like coffee table book with a bunch of pictures and all this. It's an $85 book, but it is co-written by our friend of the show, Heather Wixon, got to be involved in that.
No way.
So
Heather Wixon, also a huge pro wrestling fan, and we need to get her back on the show just to talk pro wrestling. Well, if we have anything wrestling related, we need her on the show.
Well, if you look it up and find it on the site of the publishing company, it's AM Inc. Publishing or AM Inc. Publishing. Anyway, that you can buy like the special edition that comes with a stadium cup and a bracelet and sticker, and most importantly, a checklist poster that has all of the movies that are mentioned, so you can check off.
That's so cool. Have you seen they make a movie poster of like all the Oscar winners, where every time you watch one, you scratch it off with a coin?
That's really cool.
It'd be really cool. Fucking Jody, we should figure this out for your October Scarathon.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay.
That'd be so cool if we could like figure out how much it would cost to print those out. And then you charge three times as much as it costs to print them.
All right. Other horror news. Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey is coming out very soon, March 26th. But we've been talking about all these. We've been on the forefront of this new wave of horror that they are now calling the Twisted Childhood Universe, or the Pooniverse, which is terrible. It's a terrible name.
So bad.
They already did the Pooniverse back when they did kink.com. I'm just saying. I was like,
it doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound right coming out of your mouth.
it doesn't sound better coming in your mouth. Like,
I knew. So this dark universe, the Twisted Childhood Universe, includes movies like Bambi the Reckoning, Peter Pan's Neverland Nightmare, Pinocchio Unstrung, and introduces new characters such as Sleeping Beauty, the Mad Hatter, and the Rabbit from Winnie and the Pooh, or Winnie the Pooh. I don't know. I don't know what to make of any of this. I mean, they're making money. Good for them. Actors are getting jobs, so that's good.
I think, though, you're going to see huge. I remember the first Winnie the Pooh, the horror, whatever, had a lot of buzz going into it because it was unique at the time. But I think it's really going to lose its luster really fast. Kind of like, remember Sharknado got this cult following. And then by number three, they're like, what the fuck are we watching? So I think this is going to have the same problem.
So the only thing that would change that, I think, is if they were actually good. Like, you have to actually make good movies, not the budget,
like... The budget of the new one's a lot higher, so I'm hoping it's...
Well, I'm hoping, because, you know, like, the Sharknado movies were the intentionally bad thing. Please don't go that route. The people out here making movies in general, don't do intentionally bad. It's never fun if movies are bad on purpose. They're more... Bad movies are fun because they weren't intended to be bad. Like, that's why we like them.
Yeah. I mentioned this on the podcast we did just recently. We were all guests on the how not to make a movie podcast, but our 5x2, and I forgot where I was going with that. It doesn't matter. Let's keep moving on.
I really liked the mean one, the Grinch.
I did like the mean one, but I thought it was really driven by David Howard Thornton was the best person cast for that, because he literally was like evil Jim Carrey.
I really enjoyed that movie.
I want to see David Howard Thornton in a comedy film. I think he has some really good comedy.
He's got the chops, I think.
Yeah, and could do it. At a point. Oh, I'll say the best horror films that are unintentionally funny are the ones where you feel like you're laughing along with the movie.
Yes.
Like, you're not laughing at the movie. You're laughing with the movie.
Yeah.
Jason 10, I'm looking at you. That's my example.
All right. More horror news. So I think we've already talked about that they're making a new I Know What You Did Last Summer movie. And Jennifer Love Hewitt, quote, can't confirm but won't deny that she is in the new sequel. So I mean, it sounds like she's in the new sequel. Like, she's in the movie. But for me, like, yeah, great. I would love to see her in some more stuff again. I hate that she vanished off the radar, you know, back in the early 2000s. So, yeah.
She did some, like, I don't know the right word for it. Some erotic like series.
Yeah, she had a show where she could like talk to ghosts or something, the medium or something like that. I don't remember.
I think there's another one she did that's more adult. I don't remember.
Yeah. See, I know what you're talking about, but I can't even remember the name of it. That's how memorable it was. Yeah. All right, a couple other things. We got a trailer for a movie called The Fetus, which normally would turn me away from a movie because there's a really horrible shot on video movie called Fetus. But this one stars Bill Moseley and Lauren Lavera, who played the main girl, Sienna? Sienna. In Terrifier 2. So I like her a lot. that's enough to get me there. Bill Moseley is a nice bonus.
I just saw a meme where it goes, your zodiac sign is what serial killer, what famous murderer is chasing you. Mm-hmm. And mine was Art the Clown. And I'm like, oh, I'm fucked.
Yeah, like, that's bad. Like, you're going to have a bad time going out.
I know, right? Like, at least Jason is going to cut your head off, right? You're going to be decapitated quick. Art the Clown, he's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
okay, a couple more quick things. Actually, no, just one more. Because it's one that I'm excited about. Okay, I'll get
you. Okay, so you're excited about something you may not think is going to pan out the way.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm excited and nervous. They're going to be remaking a Little Shop of Horrors movie, but it's written by the guys who wrote Gremlins 2. Okay, big. You know, I am thinking of that Key and Peele sketch, like we all are. Written by the Gremlins 2 guys, and directed by Joe Dante. Those two things give me a whole lot of hope. I think Roger Corman's an executive producer on it too. So I would be nervous that they were rebooting something that I really enjoy. But with these guys involved, it makes me hopeful.
I have to, with some of the beloved horror franchises, we're not seeing the remakes like we used to. And I mean that in the best way possible. And I think that now when something comes out, like you have people that really, you know, Joe Dante, obviously, he's a student of this genre, and I think he's going to do it. I have high hopes. I would love it. All I hope for is a cameo from Rick Moranis.
Yeah. Just to pull him out of retirement, just even for a short scene.
5 seconds, pay him a lot of money. Like, and what a great guy Rick Moranis is, just off topic, because fucking left Hollywood to be a great father, and good for him, man.
But also, you know, I'm excited about this because I love the musical Little Shop of Horrors. It's one of those. I'm a theater kid, you know, so I really love that one. But I think it would be fun to see a more not as campy version of it, like if they were trying to make it into a real movie, but also still keeping a little bit of that flavor. Well, that feels like Joe Dante's place. Like he you know, he played with the Gremlins and got the Gremlins going, but they were creepy but not creepy at the same time. Like that's his wheelhouse, and I'm hoping he can pull something like that.
They did with the original Little Shop of Horrors, I think, was played more straight. It's all boring. It's fucking boring as hell. And the Corman remake I thought was fantastic because it was Moranis, because it's just all over the place and just fun as hell.
Yeah,
but I do think maybe he can find that like happy medium in between.
Yeah, that's it. That's all I got.
Well, wasn't there also the one I thought you were going to mention is that they're also rebooting Ghoulies?
There's been a little bit of chatter about that. I don't know that there's a lot of information out there yet, but I have heard Ghoulies is getting a reboot.
That's when I'm like,
I don't really like the other Ghoulies movies all that much.
Yeah.
Like the little guy popping out of the toilet on the poster is more iconic to me than anything that happens in the Ghoulies movie. Right. Cause they're mostly just like weird wizards doing weird wizard shit. And then the Ghoulies are in the background. Like they're not great.
They're fun. They're fun. I have no problem with the Ghoulies.
I like little creatures in movies. Those are fun.
They're more of that time. So those are the kind of things I'd rather just stay in that time.
Sure.
I have a quick small snippet.
Mm-hmm.
And it is Godzilla was recently appointed as the chief of a Tokyo police station for one day, and they gave him a parade. Please look it up. It's amazing. He's got a little sash on and everything. And and congrats again to Godzilla for winning a I don't remember if we talked about it or not. Just, winning an Oscar.
I'm just so annoyed that they cannot release the Blu-ray yet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not coming out in Japan until I think June.
Yeah, well, there's something about because there's a Godzilla America movie, so they can't release the Blu-ray in America the same year as the American Godzilla movie comes out. It's like something
that means
like
I'm buying the Japanese one and buying
it. Exactly, we're off to buy spend a ton of money on imports.
Yeah, but it's
well, you know that's one of those reasons I walked out. I'm like, I'm buying that Blu-ray once it comes out. And
absolutely.
Yeah, I have to. But you know what though? Yeah, it costs a little bit more money, but I think it shows a worldwide demand for how much people like. We've talked about it before, but holy shit, was -1 just on a different level. Like it's rare a movie can satisfy like all these different levels of man. It's there's some comedy to it. There's tragedy. there's this giant kaiju monster with destruction. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it's a human story. And mm-hmm. I don't think any Godzilla movies ever made me care about the humans as much as this one did. Like, yeah, I was rooting for the humans. And that, and God damn it, aren't Asian babies just fucking adorable? Like, I'm sorry, Asian babies are
all races of babies adorable, but okay, Mondo.
Nope, Asian babies are number one. That's all there is to it. Like, there's no debate about that.
All right, I went to the randomize button on Urban Dictionary to find a quick out of touch dad word.
We're not doing that today.
We're not.
Nope. I'm going to list off names of fetishes.
Oh shit, we're doing that.
Jason is going to answer what he thinks they mean.
We're doing that tonight.
Okay. That's what we're doing tonight. I'm gonna butcher a bunch of these pronunciations, so fellow fetishists out there, just deal with me. We'll start with.
Should I call my wife in to help me on this one?
If she wants to do it, yes. But I think that please don't. No. Actually, no.
All right.
Okay. All right. Are you ready, Jason?
Okay. I'm listening.
Acrotomophilia.
Acroto. That sounds like crocodile, which I'm sure has nothing to do with that. I have nothing to go off of, so I'm just going phonetically.
I'm just trying to figure out how that one works for the crocodile.
So it's being turned on by rough
very surfaces. Slowly, apparently, because
being by coarse rough surfaces.
Oh, I like your idea. No, it's a arousal to amputees. Ever seen that movie Boxing Helena from mm-hmm. the 90s? Yeah.
No. Okay, amputees that lost their limbs from being eaten by a crocodile.
Possibly.
Yeah. You didn't. No, you're wrong.
Of course I'm wrong.
This is a fun one. Climacophilia. Climacophilia.
Jody?
I don't have anything here. If only you knew Latin, you'd be in good shape on all these.
I'm going to say being turned on by spreadsheets.
That we are hearing Jason's truth right now. If you know how to do complex formulas and spreadsheets, slide a shimmy on into Jason's DMs. It is arousal to falling downstairs.
Okay.
Yep.
Like falling down yourself or watching someone else fall?
Either or.
So I've definitely fallen down the stairs before and I didn't end it by going, oh, that was awesome.
Well, that was hot.
That was so good.
That was hot. Please call the ambulance. I have several things broken. All right, Jason, here's an easy one. Here's not a weird one. Erotic asphyxiation.
Yeah, I know what that is.
Would you care to explain it to our audience?
Being aroused by the act of choking oneself.
That's autoerotic asphyxiation. This is someone else choking you.
Also, the auto part, like, don't do that. It doesn't go well, like, a lot of times.
You think Autobots were into autoerotic asphyxiation?
That's why they got that name.
Oh my god.
Like, why do you call them the Autobots while Optimus Prime just like being choked while he was having sex? Okay. We're gonna keep on going here. God damn it. This is a weird one. Melissophilia.
Being turned on by people named Melissa?
Arousal to bees and wasps. What the fuck? No. I'm not kidding anybody, but.
But no, I don't want to kill my wife. But
I'm a married man, but if I was single, went to some lady's house and she's like, I want to try something and open the window up, all these wasps flew in, I'd fucking run.
Well, is this like people turned on my Candyman?
Oh, that's a good point. I don't know.
I think that just has to do with Tony Todd.
That voice. It's the voice, yeah. It's a voice.
Or the dogs that shoot bees.
They don't shoot bees. The bees just fly out of their mouth. They're not
shooting bees out of their mouth.
All right. Moving forward, Let's get back on track here, Jason. We're going to do a nasolingus.
Licking a nose?
Yes! Arousal to sucking on a partner's nose.
Isn't that... just thinking of... you know the scene in Bob's Burgers where Tina gets a new boyfriend and every time he tries to kiss her, he like takes her whole nose into his mouth?
Yes. Oh, God. By the way, speaking of Bob's Burgers, season 14 now and fucking firing on all cylinders. Like, yeah. God, that show is so good. Here's a fun one. Here's a real fun one.
All right, let's do one more.
Oh, just one more. We
can do some. More.
Kiro with the Q philia. We're going in alphabetical order here.
Kiro. Oh, aroused by standing in line.
That'd be Q-ophilia. But this is feeling specifically attracted to fingers, a good manicure, or hands.
Okay.
If someone out there is a chirophilia with all my broken ass fingers, like I would not be in that conversation. Spectrophilia.
Colors?
Sexual attraction to ghosts or images in the mirror.
Images in the mirror. So if I'm looking at myself in the mirror.
Mm-hmm. And that turns you on, dude. Fuck yeah. Like that's it. Then you are a whatever I just said. Two more.
Okay.
Tittle. Never mind. Tittillinga. Tittillinga.
If you can't even say it, I don't know.
Arousal to tickling others.
Okay.
And we'll do our last one, which is probably the tamest one I've mentioned. Xylophilia. With an X.
Being aroused by playing the xylophone?
I mean, I can definitely see that, though. The xylophone is a difficult instrument. It is arousal to the wood. I think it means woods, but it says wood, and we're just going to roll with it.
Like, where
it means you like dick. What?
All right, Jason, have you learned something tonight?
Yeah, I can't wait to store that information.
Which one of those is your favorite fetish, and which one are you going to indulge in later and go? The only somewhat normal one on there I think I mentioned was erotic asphyxiation, because a lot of people do that. They just don't realize they do that.
That's how David Carradine died.
No, that's autoerotic asphyxiation. He choked himself to death.
So wait, what is it again?
Just erotic asphyxiation is someone else choking you while you are in the throes of passion. And quick tip. You have a windpipe and you have arteries. You always aim for the arteries. That's a strangle, actually. It's not actually a choke. It's called a strangle. It's a blood choke. That's what you want to do because your trachea can actually be destroyed with not a whole lot of pressure. So always aim for the blood. The blood choke. You're trying to cut off the blood to the brain because then things happen and it's even more amazing than usual.
All
I'm
right.
Glad, I'm glad we don't have sponsors. I just spilled beer myself.
Mom, I think that was your diet advice right there.
I'm going to choke someone during sex. Like, oh my God. Kids, if you're listening, turn this shit off right now. Why are you listening to us?
I mean, why is anyone listening to us? But yeah, especially if you're a kid.
I do know, like, every now and again, my child will check out our podcast, and I hope this is not one they check out.
Okay. If my mother listens to this episode, then...
Like, I think it's been a solid episode, but it's not one my child will listen to.
No.
I get that.
All right. Anything else before we wrap up? No, okay.
No, I'm good. One second. Here. It's after midnight.
No, I'm just kidding. Okay. Yeah, but Jody, you're up to like 4 a.m. anyways.
Unless the power's out. Power's on, though, so.
No, I have to drive my wife to the airport in 7 hours. And then I have to go to my work and teach a training class. So, but there's no point in me coming home because it's 35 minutes to my house or 15 minutes to my office. So tomorrow is going to suck. Yeah. So, if you're listening to this, is my sucky days in the past, and it's probably better now, but I'll get over it.
Okay. Well, that wraps up another episode. Next week, we will be reviewing Bad Wolf Down and The Finger. There you go. What was that one called again?
Oh, my God. To go back to my
Kiro, list here. Was it the Kiro one?
Kiro, yes.
Yeah. Oh, someone remembered that one.
Hey, you want to know the real reason? Because all I could think of was the little chihuahua from the Taco Bell commercial. Yeah. Kiro Taco Bell. Kiro
Taco Bell. Okay.
So I still remember.
Which is what we all...
When I knew that just the media was fucking all of us up, it was when years and years and years ago, I was probably like 18, 19, and my nephew was like six or seven, and I took him to the mall, and he saw Chihuahua, and he goes, Tio. Tio is uncle in Spanish. He calls me Tio. Tio Mano. It was Tio Mano. He couldn't say these. Make him talk. I'm like, that's not how this works. But I always tell my dog when they're barking, I said, calm down, use your words. It doesn't work.
No. Try. Okay. We'll be reviewing Bad Wolf Down and The Finger from Creep Show Season 1, Episode 2. We appreciate everyone for listening. We would really appreciate if you give us a rating review on iTunes, a rating on Spotify, check out our YouTube for videos of these podcasts. And with that, we thank you for listening to Dads from the Crypt.
Follow Dads from the Crypt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or I will follow you to the grave. No, seriously, you really should watch, but be careful what you ask for. You may get it. Ha 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 ha.